Welcome to the On Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Just me today. It's a solo pod, which means you guys got to submit some questions via Twitter using the hashtag EOBpod. Today we're going to talk about trades, maybe even trading Matt Moore away. Who knows? We've got a question about that. We've got a question, of course, about Nick Cage, about boxing, about the Raptors, about Miles Turner, about the Warriors and the possibility of Kevin Durant. And we can start there before we get into the questions. Adrian Wojnarowski of The Vertical, which The Vertical seems pretty cool. A lot of good people on there, a lot of good content so far. But The Vertical is reporting that the Golden State Warriors are significant front runners if Kevin Durant decides to leave the Thunder this summer. And that leads to, one, figuring out how does that happen. It seems that Andre Iguodala would have to go. Bogut probably has to go. Jason Thompson has to go. Harold Miner and Harrison Barnes, neither of them could be on the Golden State Warriors. And then you bring in Kevin Durant. You try to hope that Festus Ezeli is a good enough bargain. But I really think that, I think Azili's going to get paid this summer. I think he's going to get an enormous contract. You look at what a lot of rim-protecting big men get over the years, and this is dating back to like the Jim McElvain days. I think he got like a 5-year, $35 or $38 million contract or something along those lines by maybe the Dallas Mavericks. This was after his Sonics days, and all he could really do was block shots. And even back then, relative to the cap, he was getting paid. They tried to bring, the New York Knicks tried to get Jerome James because he was a big body that could maybe, rule the rim a little bit, and he got a big deal. And then, DeAndre Jordan, before he was really a proven commodity, got a 4-year, $44 million offer sheet from the Golden State Warriors that the Clippers matched to keep him there. So if he's getting that kind of money back then, Festus Ezeli in a salary cap that is going to jump over $100 million, you got to think he's, I think he's going to get $15, $16, $17 million a year because, and now one concern with him is that he hasn't played starters minutes and he is a little injury prone. And so that could deter some suitors, but it just takes one and someone may look at that Warriors team that, ends up going 74-8 or whatever they finish with and a second title and saying, hey, we got to break them up and I want that guy as part of our team anyway. And throws just an insane offer sheet at Festus Ezeli because, he can be a valuable rim protector. He's one of the best rim protectors in the league. He's a good rebounder. His offensive game really isn't that bad. I think you could feature him more than what the Warriors do. And so that's a valuable guy on the market. But if they can keep him at a reasonable price and they can go out and get Kevin Durant, that's a pretty good signing. That's a pretty good offseason, even with all the change you have to do. We're going to talk a little bit more about them later. But then the other thing that Woj wrote about in his column is that the Clippers may be interested in a sign and trade of Blake Griffin for Kevin Durant. You have to sell Kevin Durant on come play with Chris Paul, come play with DeAndre Jordan. You play for Doc Rivers. This is the structure you want. These are the stars you want to play with. We can make this happen. You'll get the ball more than you do with Russell Westbrook because we know Chris Paul is going to try to find Kevin Durant as much as possible. Not that Westbrook isn't a good point guard because he is. It drives me insane when people say that Westbrook isn't a point guard because you're just not paying attention. You're looking at highlights and you're looking at the bad conversations about him on talk radio, or I guess listening to the bad conversations about him on talk radio, but you're really not paying attention to his game. He is a very good passer. He's a very good playmaker for others. He does it a lot. I think he's averaging like 9.5 assists this year or something along those lines, maybe even higher at this point. But you're looking at all the wrong parts of his game if you don't think that. But Chris Paul is a different type of veteran. He's a different type of point guard. And maybe the Clippers can say, hey, come be here, big market. We can take care of you. You get to be the guy. You get to have these certain aspects. We have an owner who is willing to pay whatever. This is what you want. This is where you want to be. And then the Thunder do that because instead of losing Kevin Durant and then having to convince Russell Westbrook the next year that he should stay with them in 2017 when he's a free agent, you can say, hey, we've still got Blake Griffin, Oklahoma's own Blake Griffin. You can still have this incredible 1-2 punch with him here, stay here and figure that out. But that's kind of the conversation. We have some more trade stuff involving the Atlanta Hawks. Apparently Jeff Teague is being shopped around, which we talked about a little bit. And then Al Horford, if they're worried about Al Horford, then maybe they're going to start taking calls on him as we approach a trade deadline in the next what is it? It's a 2 weeks and 2 days, something like that. 2 weeks and 2 days, almost to the minute of when I'm recording this. So a lot of activity that could be had, and a lot of activity that at least we're going to get a lot of rumors going on. But let's get into your questions. We're going to start off with, oh man, I apologize if I butcher your name. It is Adithia, at Brown as the Night. Which, all right. Wants to know, would I trade Matt Moore to the Players Tribune for Kevin Durant? I don't think I would. I don't know. We'd have a pretty good basketball team in terms of if we had Durant, we have Raja Bell on staff, we have Rip Hamilton on staff. I'll throw myself at point guard, and then Jonah Carey's tallish. He wouldn't be the tallest guy, but he can still be our center. So maybe we'll go that route, and then we could play. I don't know. Play against other companies' players. ESPN may have an upper hand there because they just have so many guys there. But Kevin Durant's in a contract year, so I'm not moving Matt Moore for Kevin Durant. Now, can I get Kevin Durant and then convince him to re-sign? Sorry, Matt. Now you're the new contributing lead deputy editor for Derek Jeter's Players Tribune. At Whammy Giveaway, Alfredo Rodriguez wants to know, could a Griffin-Durant swap fix all the Clipper problems, the bench, small forward, and a bad reputation? It's not going to fix the bench. The only way you fix the bench is by having quality players on the bench, and they're starting to get that way. I still think Lance can be a nice factor for them. I like the Prigioni-Aldridge combination. Jamal Crawford can still cook. You'd like him to cook a little bit more than what he's doing, but I still think the weapons are there. You need a little bit more depth inside. Bamute's been nice. Paul Pierce can be a valuable reserve for them. But just them getting consistency together, that will fix the bench, not a move of a star swap for star swap. The small forward situation would certainly be fixed. I also think you'd want Kevin Durant to play a lot of stretch four for you because he just, he's going to murder no matter where he is in the lineup. But I think that's a really good idea. So it definitely fixes that. In terms of bad reputation, that's actually a really good question here because Kevin Durant complains. Like, he works the refs, as much as any other superstar. And does that get perceived differently when all of a sudden he's in a bigger market, he's on more nationally televised games, even though the Thunder get a lot of nationally televised games? Just being in a Clippers uniform and complaining, will they think that, the Clippers have infected Kevin Durant with this mentality that Doc Rivers has kind of fostered and making them a complaining group? I don't think that does fix their bad reputation. It may even hurt his. Plus, when you factor in all the stuff of how he's commented about the media in the past, you go to a bigger media. Los Angeles media is not all that biting. It's not like the New York media where they will, if they don't like you, they will try to ruin you. Los Angeles media is a little bit more forgiving with that stuff. But still, you have those comments more regularly in a bigger market. That could affect the reputation. So the bench, I think, could correct itself. Small forward issue definitely gets corrected. Bad reputation, I don't think it corrects that. I think the only way that they fix that is Chris Paul doing it less, them not getting caught up in complaining instead of going back and playing defense, and Doc Rivers maybe not working the refs quite as much. But even then, once people have made up their mind on what you're going to be in terms of complaining or a drama queen or however you want to put it, that stigma just sticks with you in the NBA, fairly or unfairly. At Flyby Night, Justin Russo wants to know, how did Andy Dufresne stick the poster back on the wall when he was inside the tunnel during the movie Shawshank Redemption? This is a phenomenal question because it drives me quite crazy whenever I watch it, because I believe everything about the escape. I believe, the methodical years and years of chipping away and covering up with a poster and chipping away and covering up with a poster and all that stuff and being able to hide it. But once you get into the tunnel, that poster was so flush against the wall that there is no you just kind of reach. Like, it's not like a fabric poster. Like, it's paper. So that's going to tear if you kind of try to reach too much around the corner to fix it. And let's be honest, he's in a prison in what? Like, the, I don't know how long he was there, 60s, 70s? He's in the prison back then. I guess maybe he was into the 80s or 90s. I don't really remember how long this movie spans. But I'm just going to guess he didn't have the best adhesives in terms of putting the poster on the wall. I don't think he had that weird blue gunk that you would take to college with you that didn't damage the walls, but you could put posters. Like I put up all kinds of obnoxious basketball posters, and I got a Tupac poster, maybe a Snoop poster when I was at San Diego State, and you put them up with that blue gunk. I don't think he had that. I don't think, like, if he has just tape, I don't think it's easy enough to just stick it like that from the tunnel. So I think it's an inside job. I think someone else is in on it. We never get to see that because maybe it was a deleted scene. At Tyler T. Miles wants to know, who do you like more moving forward if you had to choose one? Nerlens Noel or Jahlil Okafor? This is a very tough question because you kind of look at it, all right, do I think Okafor can learn enough defensively to, one, anchor my offense, and two, be a good enough anchor on defense with athletic wings around him and guys who can maybe make up for his faults? I guess kind of like, maybe it is a lazy comparison, but we keep coming back to Al Jefferson when we start talking about Jahlil Okafor. Whether he's a better Al Jefferson or a worse Al Jefferson, it does seem to be that kind of a player. And so would you rather have that, or would you rather have Nerlens Noel, who maybe, I don't know, like, is it crazy to think he can be kind of a super Marcus Camby, or a better Marcus Camby, or a more durable Marcus Camby, or some version of Marcus Camby? Which player would you rather have? Do you want the anchor of defense who can maybe become a great pick and roll option, a decent enough scorer in the post, and a guy who can get you, you know, 12 to 15 points a night just off being active from other guys' actions? Or do you want the guy who's going to command the respect and the attention of a defense every night? And that can wear, you know, that can wear the opponent down, and then, you know, surround that guy with shooters and hope that his passing ability and the system they work out ends up, you know, making up for whatever defensive deficiencies are there. I think I'd go Okafor, but I mean, that's a really tough decision because you really have to figure out what you're building. And maybe the way that we see successful teams building right now is making sure you do have that defensive anchor and you just surround them with other things. Now I don't know that you're building around Nerlens Noel as much as you're building around Jahlil Okafor. So that also factors in. I mean, if we're talking Noel as like a second or third guy, maybe a DeAndre Jordan type, that's probably more valuable than having Okafor as a one or two. But I think I'd still go Okafor and just hope that you can fill in the gaps defensively while maximizing his posting, maximizing his skill, his scoring in isolation, hoping he's a good enough free throw shooter long term, and just seeing if you can surround him with shooters and take advantage of that. Speaking of big men, young big men, at MFF Gooner wants to know, have you guys changed your opinions on Miles Turner now? Well, I can't speak for the other guys because I don't really remember what they, one, thought about him, two, what they know about them or what they think about them now. But I wasn't very high on Miles Turner coming into the draft. I wasn't even crazy about the Pacers selection. I didn't think it was a bad pick, but I didn't know that that was the answer for them. But he can play. I mean, he's much better than I thought he would be at this point. And you know, the questions I have about him, I still don't know how he does offensively, you know, once there's more of a scouting report on him and more of a focus in taking him away as he becomes a better player. Defensively, you know, the huge block on LeBron James aside, I think you can feel pretty good about him defensively, but you still don't know, is he a guy that can randomly make plays, or is he a guy that can anchor a defense? But he's way ahead of where I thought he would be, even at this point as a rookie, and I think my opinion on him has definitely changed, seeing him more in an NBA environment. I didn't like him in the college environment. I like him in the NBA environment, and I probably should have factor that in more as I was trying to guess what he'd be like in the NBA. At Grizz God wants to know, hoop idea, we don't do that, Big Brother show involving one NBA team and staff, what team are you selecting? Normally I'd just say Rasheed Wallace. That's usually my answer with a lot of these type of questions, but I'm going to try to play it correctly, and I think I either want to see the Clippers with their staff and their roster, or the Warriors. Now, the Warriors may be boring to some, but I really do think you guys, you lock them in a house and you have the cameras on them, and there are some egos there and there are some agitators there. That may not go as well as you think. It may turn into a very contentious attitude throughout the entire house. So maybe you want to see like whether or not they do have that great chemistry together, or whether they'll fall apart. Whereas the Clippers, there's so many weird personalities, so many potential complainers, so many potential instigators. That one seems more obvious to do. I guess maybe, I'm trying to think of another team. Maybe the Rockets would be a good one. just because I wish if we could do that, I'd like to bring back Kevin McHale as the coach because I want to see him deal with those guys locked in a house. But those would be probably my top three choices for doing that kind of a scenario. At Hulbert Joe wants to know, should Portland invest their future in Terry Stotts by giving him a lengthy contract extension? I say yes. I think Terry Stotts is a really, really good coach, really smart coach, really forward-thinking, a guy who gets where the NBA has been and where it's going and trying to figure out how to do that. I think you saw that last year as that Portland team really rounded out and looked dangerous. Maybe they didn't have the talent to really be a true title contender, but I think they maximized kind of what they had. And then this year, you see what he's doing with a much worse team. I mean, Damian Lillard's great. CJ McCollum's really come forward as a big-time scorer that defenses have to worry about. He's not just putting up empty stats. But what he's doing with guys like Alfred Camino and Mason Plumlee and Noah Vonleh and Ed Davis and Myers Leonard and Alan Crabb, like he's really created a good environment for role players to kind of find their sweet spot and find what they're capable of doing in terms of contributing. And because of that, it's led to them being a borderline playoff team. I mean, they're in the 8 seed right now. I don't know if that holds up because they do have a bit of a tough schedule the rest of the way, but they're building confidence as each month goes on. They just had their best month since January of 2009. They had their best January since January 2009, and that's with probably their least talented team in that stretch. I mean, that's a lot of that's coaching, and I think that if you're going to replace a coach like Terry Stotts, you have to have a better coach lined up. I mean, that was kind of the thing with Michael Malone in Sacramento. We killed them over. It was like, hey, Michael Malone's doing a really good job. Why would you fire him? Why would you go away from something DeMarcus Cousins likes? Why are you, why the change? And in the process, realizing that George Karl was out there and interested in whether or not that can work, George Karl's a better coach than Michael Malone. Now, whether it's a better fit, that's a good question. Whether he and Cousins get along long-term, those have certainly been questions that have popped up over and over. But ultimately, I think you can feel comfortable saying, hey, George Karl is our coach. We like that better than Michael Malone as our coach. If you're doing that with Terry Stotts in Portland, who's really out there? I guess Tom Thibodeau, you could say, is a better coach. I don't know if he's a better coach for that team. And so that gets tricky. Maybe Mike D'Antoni. I mean, I like Mike D'Antoni more than Terry Stotts. I actually like him more than Tom Thibodeau as well. So I think that that's an interesting conversation to have. But if you don't have a definite guy lined up who's better than Terry Stotts, especially with what he's shown you this season so far, even though it's a down year in the Western Conference, if you can't figure out who that guy is before you want to move on, I think you extend Terry Stotts because I think he's a great coach. I think he's a great offensive mind. I think he knows where the league's headed, and I think he knows how to maximize role players. And maximizing role players may be the hardest thing after making sure you have stars on board and buying in. At Go the Distance 49 wants to know, where do you guys see this win streak by the Jazz ending? Maybe tomorrow night, maybe Wednesday against the Nuggets. I like where this Nuggets team is. I like the way they're playing. I like the way they're playing as of late. They seem to really be coming together this month so far. I didn't check after last game, I don't think, but so far this month, as of like Sunday, the Nuggets were better on the court. They were positive on the court with Emmanuel Mudiay in the game, and they were a negative when he was out. That wasn't so much the case throughout the other parts of the season. So they're learning how to play with him and make it a positive impact and put the right young guys and veterans around him. And this Jazz team is still susceptible. I saw them against the Bulls Monday night and they won, and it was a great win. It was a gutty win. And they, they really made plays at the end of the fourth quarter and the end of overtime to one, come back and give themselves a chance to win the game, and two, to secure the victory. And that was, that was a tough game, but there were times in that fourth quarter where I was watching them run offense, and credit them, they weren't just saying, hey, Rodney Hood, get the ball, or Gordon Hayward, get the ball and make a play and go be a hero. They were running an actual offense, but against a Bulls team that has been struggling defensively but is still good defensively, the offense didn't look that good. And it looks stagnant at times, and it looked broken at times, and I think that this Nuggets team can capitalize on those moments as long as they're able to get their offense going. Now, that's the tough thing about facing the Jazz. The Jazz defense has been very good, and it's very good with Gobert and Favors back in the lineup. But I don't know. If they beat the Nuggets, then they have a game Friday at home against the Bucks. I think that should be a win. And then they're in Phoenix. That should be a win. Maybe they can push this thing to, like, 5, 6, 7 games, but I don't think it's going much more than that just because it's still a very inexperienced Jazz team that is learning how to win and learning how to carve an identity out for themselves and learning how to make those good moments their regular habits. And that's still a process for this team. And so I don't think it would go much more than that. But I think they could push it to – they're at 3 right now. Could be 4, 5. I think they could push it to 6. I don't know how much longer that'll last. But I'll say 6. I'll say they win the next 3 games, and then we don't know what happens. At Peter Senek, Knox Harrington wants to know, what are some of Channing Frye's ideal trade destinations? Will his availability hurt the Pelicans' value for Ryan Anderson? I don't think it'll affect – Ryan Anderson's value as much as Ryan Anderson's expiring contract affects that. The difference is that Channing Frye is very much a stretch 5, and Ryan Anderson is very much a stretch 4, and just having those different distinctions, like obviously Channing Frye is not going to be the anchor of a defense, and he's not going to be that guy, but he can't do as much perimeter-wise defensively as maybe Ryan Anderson has the potential to do because of the difference in size and the difference in positions. So I don't think that'll affect. I think if you're making a move for Ryan Anderson, Channing Frye also being on the market is not going to affect that. But if we're going to look for possible destinations that make sense, I mean, I guess if Milwaukee was more in the hunt in the East, I'd probably say them. I would actually love for the Wizards to go make a move for Channing Frye and try to see if he can kind of jumpstart some of that offense and get it into more of that pace and space style that Randy Whitman and John Wall have wanted to play. Really since the playoffs last year. I'm trying to think who else would be a good fit for it. I don't think New York would be interested, but I wouldn't mind him returning to New York. I definitely would like him in what they do more than I like Kevin Serafin, although I think Kevin Serafin's been fine. Is there anybody else? You know, maybe Toronto could be interested. I don't think the Clippers would need him. The Kings definitely don't need him. Maybe Dallas. Dallas would be a really nice fit for him in terms of what they like to do and what his skill set is. So those would probably be, you know, those teams I mentioned, those would probably be the list of possible trade destinations. I also don't know how active this trade deadline is going to be. At the _long2, Lucas wants to know, I'm trapped in my apartment because of South Dakota getting over a foot of snow. 1, what is the best or worst movie to watch? 2, send help. Can we count Kill Bill 1 and Kill Bill 2 as one movie? Because if we count them as one movie, and I know they were intended to be one movie originally, you know, worse ways to spend your snowed-in day than watching, you know, 4 hours of Beatrix Kiddo slicing people up and trying to get her daughter back and really, that, I mean, that's just a fun soundtrack throughout the day. Like, that would be one to do. The worst movie you can watch. Now, if there are worse movies than this, give yourself a go with Jupiter Ascending. I think it's on, like, the Cinemax or HBO apps. It's really exceptionally bad. And it's long, so it will definitely take up some of that snow-filled day. I don't know that you're going to be happy you did it. I don't know that it's fun bad. When I watched it, it was kind of late at night, and I fell asleep like 3 different times during the movie. Missed big plot points, I felt like, because of it, and I didn't really care, so it's not exactly going to grip you. But yeah, I would say either watch Kill Bill 1 and 2 as one movie for the fun afternoon, or watch Jupiter Ascending for, you know, it's not going to make you want to go die in the snow like Jack Nicholson in The Shining. I don't think it's going to cause that. It's not going to make you happy with life. It's not RIPD angry. It's more like, what, you know, I make bad choices angry. So I would say Jupiter Ascending. And for sending help, I can't help you there. At DPope123 wants to know, is it time for the Magic to change course, or do they go into another lottery and wait for the youth movement to pay off? They're in a tough spot, and we can tie this into kind of the Channing Frye talk, but, you know, they had such a bad month of January. They went 2-12, I think, and really a comeback win with Mario Hezonja scoring 17 points against Boston. That was the thing that kept him going 1-13. You know, this is a team that looked good early on, but as the league has adjusted to them and what Scott Skiles wants to do and what those young guys are capable of doing, you know, it looks bad. And it's not like oh my God, we have to blow this up and find a different direction bad. Just not guys maximized. Like, I don't feel like Tobias Harris is getting maximized. I don't feel like Nikola Vucevic is doing all that much to impact the team, you know, night in and night out. It's not that he's having a bad year, but you kind of need him to be more – you certainly need him to be more defensively. I don't know you can ask him to do a whole lot more offensively and on the boards, but, yeah, you just need more of an impact from him. They could really use a point guard. Like, Elfrid Payton is bad right now. Like, I know we think, like, the cool hair and everything is fun, but he's really – like, he's a bad shooter. He's not doing a good job as a playmaker. You have to wonder – it's still very early for him, you know, only second year, and – he looked good in the rookie season, or at least maybe better than some people expected. And I don't think he's not a starting point guard in this league. But I think if you're the Magic, especially with how poorly the Magic have played throughout the season with Oladipo and Payton on the floor together, you do have to wonder if you actually have your point guard of the future, or do you need to keep looking? Do you need to keep shopping around? Is he just a placeholder as his youth movement tries to get going? He needs to be better defensively. He needs to be better on offense. And they need to find some kind of chemistry between him and Oladipo. Oladipo, you know, also hasn't been great. He's been better, but he hasn't been great. They're kind of a mess on the wings in terms of figuring out what they want to do with Fournier. I think, you know, this isn't just because I like him. Like, I think Hezonja needs to play more and have a shorter leash and be allowed to, you know, kind of be that microwave type player. I don't know that they're doing the right things with Tobias Harris and Aaron Gordon. I think Aaron Gordon should be farther along than he is. Like, he's crazy fun to watch. He makes some insane plays with his athleticism. I think he's going to be a great defender in this league. I think, you know, I kind of think he's being played out of position a lot of the times. I still think he should be a four in that, you know, Sean Marion mold that kind of allows him to freelance all over the place. But that's also tough to do if Vucevic isn't a steady, you know, defender inside. And it's not like Amari was a great defender, but Amari would at least try. It's not that Vucevic doesn't try, it's just that he's kind of too slow to really make an impact. So you got to get tricky with the way you're gonna do the lineups. But I think you look at that entire team and just about everyone up and down the roster, you say, I like this guy, but you need more. And that was, you know, Scott Skiles' job. And so I don't think you need to break it up. I think if you could move someone, if you could move Channing Frye and a young guy to go get a veteran player, a nice asset or something like that, I think you make that move. But yeah, we're probably looking at another lottery. And it's not going to be a great lottery pick because they're kind of too good to get a high pick unless things fall apart completely or unless, you know, they get lucky on lottery night. But yeah, I don't really know. They're kind of in that situation that we've seen with, you know, that we're starting to see with Utah, that we've seen with maybe OKC in the past, that we'll eventually see with the Timberwolves. Like, it's great to have a bunch of young assets. Eventually, you're not either going to be able to pay them all, or you have to find a package to flip to bring in a better player. Orlando may be in that situation where it's great you've accumulated talent. Now they either have to do something or you have to do something with them in a trade. At That True Talk wants to know, if Kevin Durant joins Golden State Warriors this offseason, how many teams in history would be better than them? I mean, we're not sure that the Warriors aren't the best team in history right now. I mean, the way they've played, some people get freaked out because you can't say Michael Jordan wasn't the best at everything. And that 96 Bulls team went 72-10. They were, you know, best in history. You could also throw the, what was it, 72-73 Lakers in there. I think that was the one that went on the 33-game win streak with, say, Elgin Baylor, Wilt, and Jerry West. I think I have that year correct, although it's possible I'm off. But you guys know which one I'm talking about. They won 69 games, which was nice. The 86 Celtics are obviously up there. But this... I know this Warriors team is on pace to beat the 72-win season by the Bulls. And then if we're just swapping out Barnes, Bogut, and maybe a couple of role players and bringing in Kevin Durant, there are some people who think that doesn't work. I think it works. I think it works a lot. And I think you move Klay to the third option. Having Klay Thompson as your third option is insane, especially with the way they play. It will all work. So you're looking at a starting lineup of, let's say they keep Azeli as well. Curry, Klay, Durant, Draymond Green, Festus Ezeli, and then you can find cheaper guys to fill out the roster. There will be veterans that want to play with that team and win rings, and that team will win rings. And so, you had Kevin Durant to the Warriors, and I know the sacrifice you have to make to do that. I think that's the best team in history, and I think there's a chance they turn into the 2012-2013 Lakers and seem like they're ruined from a little too much star power and not enough team play, but I think they would figure it out pretty easily. I think Steve Kerr can help them figure out. I don't think Bob Myers does it unless it works out. And I don't know, Durant and Curry together may be the best combination we've ever seen in terms of scoring standpoint. At Pants Free Zone, a guy after my own heart, wants to know, what is the Raptors' ceiling so this year? So I'll answer that. Eastern Conference Finals. They can make the Eastern Conference Finals. They're on fire right now. I think they've won, what, 11 in a row, 12 in a row, something like that. They're doing it without DeMar DeRozan, who was a big acquisition for them. The two-point guard lineup of Kyle Lowry and Corey Joseph is still devastating. Jonas Valanciunas is playing well. DeMar DeRozan's been fantastic. They're deep. Luis Scola's been pretty good for them. I like where they are, but I am still a little bit worried that they rely too much on free throws and what happens if they don't get those calls in the playoffs. And that's a legitimate concern. And then, you know, outside of that, can they challenge the Cavs? Eh, they can make a competitive series, but I still think the Cavs will pretty much roll in like five, maybe six games, if not sweep them. And so, you know, that's a great start. They want to win 50 games. They might win 50 games this year. They want to, you know, move past the first round. I think they'll move past the first round, although matchups will still determine that. But yeah, I think their ceiling is, you know, Eastern Conference Finals, maybe be competitive, and you go into next season trying to figure out, can we sign DeMar DeRozan for a reasonable rate, or do we have to max him? And then if we have to max him, what decision does that bring? And then the second question that Pants Free Zone wanted to know, what if they sign Chris Pratt and his Murder of Raptors from Jurassic World? First of all, Murder of Crows is fantastic. I think we can extend that to Murder of Raptors. You know what? I just don't think Raptors would be good on offense. Maybe that's a controversial take when it comes to dinosaurs playing basketball, but that's why CBS has me, is for those kinds of hot takes. I don't think Raptors can play basketball. I think they would foul out way too quickly. And sure, maybe the rest of the team is murdered, but you're going to forfeit the game. At Notorious NTB, Noah Bartholomew wants to know, he has two questions. One, who is the fourth best player in the league? Not the MVP, just fourth best player in terms of talent. Assuming that Curry, LeBron, and Durant are the top three in some order, he's going with Russell Westbrook over Kawhi Leonard. I agree. I think Russell Westbrook is the fourth best player. You can make the argument for Leonard. You can make the argument for Blake Griffin. You can make the argument for Anthony Davis. Maybe even DeMarcus Cousins you can make the argument, but I'll take Westbrook over those guys right now. If I'm building a team, maybe I go Kawhi just because I'd rather build with the wing than with the point guard. But yeah, I think Westbrook's the fourth best player in this league. Second question, more of a request. Favorite Wu-Tang member? I think my favorite Wu-Tang rapper is Ghostface Killa. I think my favorite member, though, is probably Method Man, just because I like everything. I like the post-rap career as well. The rap career and solo efforts weren't as good. The stuff with Redman is obviously phenomenal. But, yeah, I don't know, like, How High, The Wire, the other stuff he's been in. I think, what was he in? He was in Garden State for a little bit. I respect the versatility of all that. And not that other members haven't been versatile, but Method Man's kind of my favorite personality outside of that because of the other things he's been able to do. At Alex CKS Zeto, asks, what's the better hashtag, Snowbageddon or Snowpocalypse? I do this a lot, and so I'm going to criticize myself here. Just throwing apocalypse at the end of something is kind of lazy. It's kind of the same as throwing gate. So it's not that it's bad or not that it's not funny, but Snowmageddon is just better. I think we should throw Mageddon at the end of way more things just because, one, saying Mageddon kind of reminds me of Corey Maggette, who I was a big fan of, and then saying Snowmageddon or like B-Mageddon or, you know, Ants-Mageddon or, I don't know, you know, Sharknado-Mageddon, like those are fun things. So I think throw Mageddon at the end of more hashtags. At TMR8 has two questions for us. If the Kings trade Rudy Gay, will they have the losing Rudy Gay bump that the Raptors and the Grizzlies had? So when the Grizzlies traded Rudy Gay, they had a bump. They got instantly better, started playing instantly better, and kind of went on a run after that. The Raptors did the same thing. They traded him to Sacramento. You know, they kind of jump-started things a little bit, and some of that was what they got from getting more depth. Some of that was freed up opportunities for other guys like Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. But whatever it was, there's been a bump. two out of two. I think we can go three out of three. If the Kings trade Rudy Gay, I think they get a bump. Maybe that's the way they make the playoffs. Trade Rudy Gay, take that that depth, and move on into the playoffs as the 8 seed. Second question from Travis is, overrated or underrated actor Adam Scott? I don't believe in overrated and underrated, so I'm not going to say that. But in terms of like, hey, do I think this guy is good or not? I like Adam Scott. I mean, I think we probably know him best from Parks and Rec. I'm trying to think of other things he's been in. So he's great in Step Brothers. He's great. Like, I really like Party Down. I thought Party Down was a great show. Should probably watch that some more because I like Party Down a lot. What else is he in? Let's take a look. I don't think I ever saw Leap Year. I did see he is in Piranha 3D, which that is certainly a movie. So I'm gonna give him kudos for being in Piranha 3D. What else has he been in? I didn't like They Came Together. Just because I'm not big on spoofs, so I wasn't crazy about that. Sleeping with Other People is a really good indie movie. It's weird. It's very weird, but I really enjoyed that. I thought he was great in that. What else? I feel like I'm missing a huge thing he's been in. I'm scrolling through his IMDb real quick. He's in Monster in Law, so yeah, that's a thing that happened. I think that's enough. I think that's enough for me to feel like he's a good actor, a good comedic actor. So yeah, I'm two thumbs up on Adam Scott. And then we've got four more questions here, three of them from Temecula Flight Club, or Temecula Fight Club, otherwise known as @Sterner86. Which would you rather be able to do nonstop, 200 push-ups or 200 sit-ups? I think I'd rather be able to do 200 push-ups. I think you can watch someone do a bunch of push-ups in a row. I think it would be really boring to watch someone do a bunch of sit-ups in a row. It's nice having a strong core and everything, but I'd rather have the upper body strength to open spaghetti jars or jars of spaghetti sauce. Can we get an update on your boxing training? Hoping to see you on an undercard later this year. Yeah, so I've done it, every other day for about a week. So it's like, 4 days? I'm 1-3 against a heavy bag. I felt like I should have been 1-2-1, though. I felt like one of those was a draw that I did really well in. I added an extra round, and that's been tough. But yeah, I feel great about it. It's a great workout. If you can go box, I say go box. And then the third question from him, be honest, did you really try a hard chest pass at the boxing bag at least once? So, go boxing and then do some dribbling down in the parking garage. No, I haven't thrown any chest pass to the boxing bag yet. But what I have done is, part of the dribbling stuff is throwing off the wall, behind the back, underhand, overhand, from the side, different angles, aiming for a spot on the wall. And it's nice because there's a little, intersection of two lines. So there's four little quadrants I can aim for. And then, doing ball handling drills or doing, certain dribbles and movements off of catching those passes and making sure I have accuracy in the passes and accuracy and control with the ball when I do that. So no, nothing at the boxing bag, but definitely stuff at the wall. And people who still come through the parking garage and see me doing this stuff, I get a lot of weird looks. And then our last question from @MonteWorldPeace wants to know, is Nick Cage more of a person or a state of mind? Nick Cage is a god, my friend. He is a god. This has come up recently on a couple of Twitter moments, Twitter binges of myself, which is a lot, happens a lot of the time. But the movie Next, if you haven't seen the movie Next, hey, who was it earlier? Lucas? Did I get that name right? Lucas, who's trapped in South Dakota with over a foot of snow. Go watch the movie Next. If you haven't seen it, I really want to know what you thought about your own life when the twist happens. Next is about I think he's like an illusionist, because we don't say magician, illusionist in Vegas who like is... He can basically predict the future. It's why he's such a good illusionist and trickster, is because he can kind of like see the future and put himself in those situations. So, I don't know, the government gets involved and he's trying to get Jessica Biel to sleep with him. And there's a lot going on in the movie, but because of that, he is a god. And Lucas, go watch that movie. And Matt, a.k.a. Monte World Peace, make sure that you realize that it's more than a person. He's more than a state of mind. He is everything. Thanks for listening to the solo pod today. We'll come back tomorrow with guest Paul Flannery of SB Nation, who is fantastic. Looking to have Nate Duncan on later in the week and maybe some other guests after that. You can submit questions on Twitter with the hashtag EOBpod. You can email, which go to the CBSSports.com page, click on the podcast post, and the email is in there for how to submit questions. Please subscribe on iTunes, leave a review, subscribe on Stitcher, leave a review. Any other pod feeds, please subscribe and leave a review if you can. Helps the numbers, helps the rankings and all of that. And thanks for listening. We will talk to you later.